From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Despite all the challenges of the last year, after 8 credit downgrades our state suffered under my predecessor, I say with full certainty Illinois' fiscal condition is heading in the right direction for the first time in the 21st century. This monumental development from Moody's Investor Service recognizes the depth of our efforts to reverse the damage of the past.
Well, that is Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. Illinois got some more positive news this week regarding the state's financial picture with a credit rating upgrade from Moody's. Also, the governor signed legislation that takes a look at college athletes and allows them to finally profit from their name, image, and likeness. We'll discuss those and more topics this week on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, we have Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House editor. And joining us today, Brendan Moore, Illinois state government reporter with Lee Enterprise, which owns several newspapers in Illinois. And Brendan, thanks for being with us once again.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So we talked about some of that positive news last week on the show when it comes to Illinois' financial picture. And this week, that credit rating upgrade. Hannah, is this a big deal?
You know, it is. I mean, there are lots of folks who, you know, after the financial crisis of 2008 would say credit rating agencies, they do not necessarily mean as much as they used to, or maybe perhaps they never did. But, you know, when you look at the trajectory of Illinois' finances over the last 20 plus years, and especially when you consider the history, we're coming on 4 years since the 736 days Illinois went without a budget during the budget impasse under former Governor Bruce Rauner. When you think about that recent history, when we were downgraded all the way to, you know, just hovering above junk bond status, I mean, it is a big, of course, when you zoom out, we're still the state with the lowest credit ratings in the entire nation by a long shot. You know, there are some maps I found online that showed, you know, Illinois in as the red state in a sea of green, you know, representing states with bond ratings that are not, you know, nearly as bad as Illinois. But, you know, it is still a big deal. I think last week we talked about the, you know, analogy of, you know, if Illinois could turn around its reputation as, you know, a state that is circling the drain. Obviously, we have a lot of work to do. You know, and Democrats, their self-congratulatory statements this week were, you know, obviously a bit much overstated, you know, them saying that, like, clearly we're the party of fiscal responsibility, this proves it, all of that stuff, you know, overstated, but also to be expected. But all in all, I mean, it is, like, I don't think we should pass it by and thumb our noses at this, because, you know, we should take our wins where we can get them, I would say.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, we talked about this on the show last week. Brendan, you weren't with us last week, but when you take a look at this, a lot of the money came from the federal government into the state of Illinois. That certainly helped the picture right now, but you take the help where you can get it, I would assume.
Absolutely. Obviously, Illinois received billions of dollars from federal government for COVID relief. But there is no indication that we received more or less help than any other state. So Illinois is certainly not special in that regard. And then also, as Hannah even mentioned, there our tax revenues are better, maybe partially because of people getting money in their pockets through, you know, unemployment or stimulus funds, which has certainly helped state coffers. And as you said, it is good news. You know, it's a baby step, but it is a baby step in the right direction. And I think if it were opposite, if Illinois had gone to junk bond status, we would all be decrying, I guess, the state of the state, and there would be a ton of self-congratulatory press releases from Democrats. We get a lot of press releases from Republicans, decrying where the state is at. So it's a positive step, and it's a step that, amazingly, there's been some budget stability over the past few years. Just obviously the act of passing a budget, which was not a guarantee just a few short years ago, and the fact that it happened in a year after we faced a global pandemic, the fact that we are in this spot, I don't think anybody could have predicted a year ago. I think people would have said you were crazy. So again, as Hannah said, take your wins where you can, and while knowing, keeping your eyes open, that Illinois still has the worst credit rating of any state in the country.
Yeah, Charlie, you're not, I wouldn't say you're not a fan of the bond rating houses, but you're definitely somebody that doesn't put as much stock into these credit upgrades and these credit ratings that are out there. Your thoughts on this and what happened this week?
Yeah, well, as you say, I'm not a fan of it because I think that they're not really a realistic appraisal of the state's ability to repay the money that it borrows from selling general obligation bonds. It was, 179 years ago was the last time we defaulted. And in Moody's report, though, it notes that the upgrade, and I'm quoting here, is supported by material improvement in the state's finances. The enacted fiscal 2022 budget for the state increases pension contributions, repays emergency Federal Reserve borrowings, and keeps a backlog of bills in check with only constrained use of federal aid from the American Rescue Plan Act. And to me, that last part kind of bears out the approach taken by the legislature and the governor in putting together the budget. We got something in excess of $8 billion from the federal government in the bailout plans. And if you recall, there was a lot of push, a lot of sentiment. We really need to spend more money on operations, on childcare, on healthcare, education, and we can use these federal dollars to do that. But the governor and the legislative leadership resisted that. And so out of the $8 billion that we got, we put $1 billion into capital programs, more or less, and we put roughly about $3 billion into operations. And so we left untouched $4 billion for future contingencies. And I think that impressed Moody's, as they said, that we put together this budget without tapping all the federal funds. But we still are in a difficult situation. We still have to meet our pension obligations. We still have just the growing costs from inflation in providing the services that we provide today. So we're not totally out of the woods, but this is the first upgrade, as Hannah said, in more than 20 years. As a matter of fact, we've had steady downgrades ever since the turn of the century. We've had, roughly a couple dozen of them, and eight of them occurred during Bruce Rauner's tenure when we had this huge budget impasse between the governor and the Democratic controlled legislature. So it's good news, but we're not out of the woods yet.
And Charlie, the fiscal year has just begun, and I saw a release from the state controller, Susana Mendoza, talking about the bill backlog down to $2.5 billion, when it was well over $16 billion not that long ago. That's quite an impressive accomplishment as well.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, as of 8 o'clock Friday morning, July 2nd, the bill backlog was rounded off $2.8 billion, 12,680 vouchers out there. And as you say, back not quite 4 years ago, it was $16.7 billion. at the height of the budget impasse, and we've managed to trim it down. Part of it was through leveraging, through selling bonds, borrowing money to pay back some of those bills for Medicaid, which enabled us to leverage reimbursement from the federal government. And some of it was the increased economic activity. As a matter of fact, the University of Illinois Flash Index came out the other day, and Professor Gertz, who compiles it, noticed that the index climbed again, and he points out that state revenues for FY 2021, the fiscal year that ended this past week, from the individual income, the corporate income, and sales taxes rose significantly. So as he said, the state entered the fiscal year in the best shape in several years, with its bond rating actually rising.
Well, Hannah, while the governor was touting this bond rating upgrade and a lot of good news there fiscally for the state, there's also been some negative press that's been coming at the Pritzker administration. You know, give us kind of an overview of what's out there right now.
Sure. I mean, it was a couple of stories, investigative stories, news outlets this week or last week, last couple of weeks, but specifically this week, the Tribune took a deep dive into why Illinois' Department of Employment Security was so vulnerable to this massive crush of unemployment fraud claims. And I believe you spoke with Tribune reporter Joe Marr for our other show statewide this week. And what Joe found was, you know, the IDES was warned, you know, we have these tools available and you should probably use them. And IDES actually did not. And so these tools, I mean, they were strongly recommended at the beginning of the pandemic last summer and also back in 2019. And so, you know, let me read from the story. Records obtained by the Tribune show the flood of fraud happened after IDES failed to follow recommendations to adopt free fraud fighting tools that were made available in 2019. Only recently did the agency begin using these tools. A separate process to help identify problematic claims also didn't become fully functional until February, nearly a year into the pandemic. And Illinois had not joined some other states in implementing safeguards meant to detect and stop sketchy claims at the door. So, you know, it's not just, I think what became clear in this story was like, yes, okay, we've heard, you know, CBS 2 in Chicago has done a tremendous job following the unemployment fraud debacle. It's not just like, oh, me as an employed person, I, you know, get a letter saying, oh, I have claims in my name and, you know, that's inconvenient for me because I have to protect my identity. But, you know, it's also folks who have gotten, you know, fraudulent claims taken out in their name. And then when they try to apply for unemployment insurance, they can't get it. And so that leaves them in a lurch because it's the one, hopefully the one or two times in their lives that they're actually need this unemployment money and they can't access it because fraudsters got to it before them because IDES left that vulnerable. And, you know, this is pretty massive. Another story that we've been talking about is WBEZ, Chicago Public Radio Station found, you know, evidence of prisoners, incarcerated people in state prisons who were beaten by guards and, you know, lax oversight there. There was another story this week. It happened back in 2018. Charges were finally filed, I believe, this week or last. So, you know, 2018 was still Bruce Rauner's term, but still, you know, it's up to Governor Pritzker to clean this up. And down in Southern Illinois at this Choate mental health facility, you know, folks were being abused. And, you know, I think it was three. Is that right, John?
Right.
Staffers there who were charged this week. And like, it's just, you know, if we think about these things in context on top of the horrific situation at the LaSalle Veterans Homes home, the 36 deaths there, that has been, you know, I've covered it, lots of folks have covered it. You know, it's a lot of things that the governor is going to have to contend with going into an election year. And, you know, we'll see if these things stick to him, like Bruce Rauner's issues with the Quincy Veterans Home. Again, that was different. Like we've pointed out many times on this station, there's still a lot of questions of lax oversight or, you know, folks who didn't do their jobs. And ultimately, as we like to say in Springfield, governor's own.
Brendan, your thoughts on that and your thoughts on whether or not some of this, like she said, could stick to the governor when he runs for re-election.
Well, Hannah stole the line I was going to use because I was going to use the same exact phrase, governor's own. They wear the jacket no matter how directly or indirectly they are involved with some of these operations in the state government. It's a massive enterprise, but at the end of the day, he is the man on top. And so he's going to be the one who has to answer these questions. And I think so far, at least it doesn't seem like it has really, I guess, stuck to him beyond some folks that are already opponents to Governor Pritzker. Obviously, he's about to enter a re-election campaign. Hasn't officially said, but all indications are he's running for re-election. There are some candidates that have already declared that they're going to challenge him. So far, none of them really have any money behind them I guess, hit home their message. But if somebody does, they have some ammunition to go after Governor Pritzker, whether it is on some of these issues with unemployment security, which has, or unemployment benefits, which have touched a lot of people in this state. We've all heard the stories of people waiting for hours and hours and hours on hold. And then obviously there are some parallels, some differences, but some parallels with what's happening at LaSalle, a veterans home. So I think it remains an open question whether those things are going to, whether it's going to, stick to the governor, whether it's going to snowball and there's going to be some of these issues that become so large for him. But so far it doesn't seem like it has. But obviously it's still very early. We're still over a year away from, or a little bit less than a year away from the primary, and several over a year from the general election. So plenty of time for these issues, to be discussed.
Yeah, and Charlie, as was mentioned, you got to have the money to get the message out, even if you're trying to attack the incumbent governor, because people often forget some of these stories as time goes on. So again, you want to get that out there. But your thoughts on that, as far as I've always looked at it, that things are going to go wrong. State government is a huge bureaucracy. There's a lot of different moving parts. It's about how you address some of these problems, and get your thoughts on that, Charlie.
Well, I would say if you look at the issues that we've been discussing, in my mind, what the public will react to is, how does it affect us and what we care about? And on that scale, I would say the horrendous stuff that happened at the Western Illinois Correctional Center, where guards were taking prisoners into I don't know what you would call it, like a secret area of the prison where the surveillance cameras weren't focused to beat the heck out of prisoners. As bad as that sounds, I'm guessing the general public will say, well, so what? They were prisoners. They deserve whatever they get. There's kind of that attitude. The veterans home in LaSalle, I think that could be a very big issue, because these are our heroes. And because of incompetence, negligence, whatever you want to call it, some of them died under conditions in which they did not have to die. And also the employment security, that's a problem for all the states. There was an op-ed in the Chicago Tribune on Friday morning talking about what was going on in Ohio. And it was the same kind of problem. Fraudsters getting in because the state system here in Illinois, the department was woefully understaffed because no one could have predicted the pandemic. And had we hired, you know, 2 years ago, enough people to cover all the claims we were going to get, the argument would have been, why are you putting so many people on the payroll? What is this all about? And so we had that. We have really, what would you say, Iron Age type computer logistics there to handle this kind of stuff. And we just weren't prepared for it. So that those two issues, I think, are the ones that are going to resonate with the folks. Plus something that'll happen in the future that we can't predict and we won't see, but I'm guessing there'll be something that occurs during the legislative session next spring that will be a big issue, and that will be in the front of people's minds, and that will be used against Governor Pritzker. But as we said earlier, you can't mount a successful campaign in this day and age unless you've got lots and lots of money. And there aren't very many people who have as much or more money than J.B. Pritzker.
Well, there's been one name on the Republican side that's been floated more recently, and a candidate who's been playing a little bit coy on whether or not he would actually run for governor, and that's Rodney Davis, the incumbent congressman from the 13th District in central Illinois. He has said, and Brendan, and you've reported on this, that he's kind of waiting for the redistricting map for Congress to come out to see. But is he somebody who could actually mount a real challenge to Pritzker?
I think, well, if you talk to Republican strategists and people behind the scenes, yes, they think that Congressman Davis would probably have the best shot to seriously challenge Governor Pritzker, and they can see he'd still be an underdog against a governor with unlimited resources in a very blue state. But they view Congressman Davis as somebody who is conservative, could appeal to downstate voters. Obviously, he is from central Illinois, but also that he is somebody that does not necessarily scare voters in the suburbs of Chicago. In a way that maybe somebody like a Darren Bailey, state Senator Darren Bailey would. Senator Bailey's been on the record of sponsoring legislation that would kick Chicago out of the state. Congressman Davis is not that type of person, but many view him as somebody who might be able to get broad-based support in a Republican primary, who could seriously compete for votes in Chicago suburbs where you would need to be competitive as a Republican or to be competitive in a general election, and somebody that could appeal to donors. He's somebody that could go to Ken Griffin or go to Dick Uline or go to some of these big Republican mega donors, and they would trust him with their money. And so he's somebody that could seriously put together at least a formidable challenge to Governor Pritzker, somebody who might be able to get the resources that he would need to mount a statewide campaign. Obviously, as you said, he's waiting to see how the remap is going to go. As we all know, the state lawmakers passed a remap for state legislative districts and for the Illinois Supreme Court, but they punted so far on the congressional district, waiting for census data. Many believe that Congressman Davis is vulnerable. Illinois loses a seat in this coming census. Many believe that there will be a Republican that will be mapped out, and Congressman Davis could be that one. He is very explicitly has not been subtle about hinting that he would prefer to go back to Congress, where he is climbing the ladder on the House Transportation Committee. He has a chance to chair that committee in a few years if they do retake the majority. He would prefer to go back to Washington, but that might not be a realistic option depending on how the map is drawn. And so you're seeing him definitely take on Governor Pritzker a little bit more directly, keeping his options open. And it is a serious possibility. And I know many Republicans would really like for a Rodney Davis or somebody like that, maybe a Darren LaHood, to run against Governor Pritzker. So something to definitely keep an eye on over the next few months as you know, the map is drawn and we see maybe some other candidates start to talk about it. You know, keep Rodney Davis, just to keep an eye on him.
All right, let's go to our notes from the field. And Hannah, let's start with you.
Yes, speaking of potential opponents to Governor Pritzker, apparently he has one, but on the Democratic side, the Sun-Times reported this week that Beverly Miles from Chicago's West Side, she's a nurse and an Army veteran. She wants to challenge Governor Pritzker in the Democratic primary. And, you know, we weren't expecting much in the way of a Democratic primary opponent. She says that he's done a good job, but, you know, she would, you know, but thinks it should be the working people in office for the working people. I mean, she has a point. He is a billionaire. So she is seeking to become Illinois' first Black woman governor.
Okay. Brendan?
So speaking of possible candidates for higher office, this week in my column, I spoke with State Representative Dan Brady, who is openly exploring a run for Illinois Secretary of State as a Republican, has not made not declared one way or another, just said that he's exploring. But I asked him about how he would plan to compete as a Republican if he did win the primary, how he'd win in a general election. And he told me some advice that that former Governor Jim Edgar gave him, basically went something like this, that you have to relate to people as a public servant and not scare the people up north, meaning the people up in the up in Chicago and in the suburbs. So basically come off as a normal person and you might have a shot.
All right. And Charlie?
Part of the problem in coming out of the pandemic has been the difficulty for working families to find childcare when their kids weren't going to be in school, particularly for single mothers. Well, the governor announced this week that families who are at or below the federal poverty line will pay only $1 for childcare. And that's, he says, is an effort to expand access to services for Illinoisans as we recover from the pandemic. He said the reduction in family payments or co-payments could reduce monthly child care costs for 80% of the state's families. And he also announced, and I should mention this too, providers in the state's child care assistance program will see an increase of 3.5% in the reimbursements to help fill job vacancies there. So that's a step forward, I think, in helping working families get things back to normal.
All right, and that is all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Brendan Moore. He's with Lee Enterprises. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app or iTunes. And join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.